Hey guys, it's Steve, the Pragmatic Constitutionalist. I am flying by the seat of my pants today, but I needed to just get on here and tell you that I'm alive. I'm alive and well. Things are much better now that I've had a little bit over a week to put my thoughts together after leaving DC, get over the flu bug, spend some time in the dental chair, and I'm not done with that yet. I've actually got to have a root canal sometime this week. Trying to get that scheduled. It's like every other thing right now. You can't have an emergency and just go in and get it done. You have to get in line. I don't know if they have, is it a dentist shortage, a dental assistant shortage? I don't know what it is, but nevertheless, it is something that I'm having to wait on. And in the process, I'm having to take some antibiotics to keep the swelling down before they have to go in and fix this thing. I have a long history of dealing with these root canals and failed root canals, and it was almost like just take the damn tooth out rather than spending the money on a root canal that's going to fail a few years from now anyway, like the rest of them do. But then again, I am old enough now that maybe it won't fail before I fail, so we'll see. But I'm doing much better now and wanted to get on here and say hello. I just finished my segment with Dan Newman on TNN Live, and we had an incredible show today. We were talking about the Twitter file release, and I may talk a little bit more about that here as I go on. I literally am unscripted right now. I just felt like that as soon as I finished that, I needed to just move on into this and give you guys a quick update on what's happening with me since I've been a little bit off the grid. Not totally. But after I got back from DC a little over a week ago, then as I said, when I got home, I had the flu and just felt like doing, you know, nothing, as you can imagine, as all of us feel like when we have one of those bugs. And it lingered a little longer than I needed it to linger because I had two shows this past weekend with my band, and those went fine. I was not 100% prepared, to say the least, both physically and mentally, after being out of the game for so long. But I spent every single day last week, despite how bad I felt, going through my drills and routines, and I wasn't practicing a lot of trumpet, but I was, we trumpet players, we can buzz on the mouthpiece, and I spent some time doing that, just kind of getting the feel for it after laying off for so long, which is not a good thing to do when you're a trumpet player. And then, because my voice was not only racked by this the flu thing that I was doing, but also just lack of use for so many weeks, I started doing my vocal exercises, and that was really hard, getting myself back into shape for that. Fortunately, I have other singers in our band, and I'm able to, and because I write the set list, I'm able to write myself out of the show. No ego involved there when it comes to making sure that we present ourselves in the best light, and as best as we possibly can. I'm not going to put myself up as the weak link when in fact I have other great musicians and other great singers in the band who can step forward and cover for me. So I wrote the shows heavily in their favor and diminished my involvement for the two nights so that I didn't bring the whole thing down. But anyway, there we go. So with all that's going on right now, all that's going on in the news, all that's taking place everywhere, I did not want to go another day without at least, as I said, not only giving a quick update on me and letting you know that I'm still alive, but covering a few things. And as I mentioned before, when I did my segment with Dan Newman on TNN Live today, we were mostly going over the Twitter files, and I might pick up on a couple of things that we didn't get to that I'd made some notes on. And I've obviously, despite the fact that I've not been around for you the last few days, I have amazingly been able to find my way back out of the swamp and realize that there's more going on in the world than just the Oath Keeper thing after 9 weeks of being completely focused on that. I did read this morning, read the updates on opening arguments yesterday in the second Oath Keepers trial that has begun. So I am keeping up with that. I am trying to keep up with what was going on with the Jeremy Brown trial, although I did not take time to do that yet today. I do need to do that. I was going to go down to Tampa, as you may have recalled, but that I was informed that trial was moving along very, very quickly. As a result of that, there was just really no reason, from what I could glean from my sources down there, for me to come down and probably only end up seeing a day or two of the trial if I had made it down there by Sunday night. So I'm going to get my update on that, and then I'll either write or report or interview someone with regard to that, because that particular trial is very much of interest to me. The second Oath Keeper trial, obviously very interesting to me. It'd be very interesting to see where both the government and the defense takes this, having learned what both sides learned. One, the most important thing that we learned from the first trial is that the government had nothing and they had to evolve. They kept losing their butts in cross-examination with their own cooperative witnesses and with their own FBI agents, because over and over and over and over again, they were told, and the jury was being told, that these guys had no plan. There was no plan. There was no plan to overturn the government. There was no plan to storm the Capitol. There was no plan to stop the certification of the 2020 election. There was never a plan. And there was never a written plan. There was never a verbalized plan. There was never a plan of any kind passed down from leadership to those that were just part of, you know, members of the Oath Keepers in order to do those things. But the point was, as the trial itself, being as lengthy as it evolved. They changed it from an explicit conspiracy to what was then about two-thirds of the way through the trial. It became an implicit conspiracy. And suddenly, by virtue of telepathy or thought crimes, they were following an implied plan to go into the Capitol and to stop the election. And then, of course, by the time they got to the end of it all, it just boiled down to the fact that despite the fact that the government did not prove their case in terms of conspiracy, they had a DC jury that was more than willing to find at least a couple of guys guilty of the seditious conspiracy idea. And I will have much, 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 much more to write about that as we go forward. So there were also mistakes made on the defense side that I think that were probably learned by this new team representing the four defendants in this new case. So it'll be very interesting to see how it proceeds going forward in comparison. I'm not going to be there, and I will not be following it in the manner that I did last time, not on a daily basis and not on a minute-by-minute basis, and certainly not sitting in the courtroom, but I will be keeping up. And then, so I am keeping up with all the other things going on outside of the Oath Keepers world and outside of the January 6th trial-related world. And, of course, the biggest thing going on right now, I think, in the country, and if it's not the biggest thing, it absolutely should be. And it is, but it's being ignored by huge swaths of the mainstream media, and that is the Twitter files. The Twitter files is easily one of the most important things that has come out in our generation. I think I said that previous podcast, is that we can't get past the fact that nothing like this has ever happened. We've never had a billionaire on our side go in and buy a gigantic communications company, something with, you know, terabytes after terabytes after terabytes of information about all of us. As I've said many times before, when it comes to Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, various other social media sites, we are the product. Our information is the product. And so we are privileged right now to have someone who went out there and spent $44 billion of his own money, unlike nobody before has had the ability to do that kind of thing, and take a public company, make it private, put it in his own back pocket, and then start the process of just opening up the books and revealing to us what's going on. It's phenomenal. Never seen anything like it in my lifetime. And because of this unprecedented view inside one of these types of companies and what's taking place, the rats are scurrying, and they're looking for the dark shadows in the corners. And so the best way that the MSM has figured out how to handle this thing is just twofold. It's either to resurrect the term nothing burger and just, it's nothing. It's no big deal. We, you know, this has all been discredited. We've all heard this stuff before. And that's a process that's actually a modus operandi of the mainstream media when they are caught with their hand in the cookie jar to actually go, that's, you know, we've heard all of that before. And that's been long discredited. That's just something that they say over and over and over and over and over again. When they are caught, and they are caught. And when I say they're caught, they are caught. Mainstream media is caught just as much as big tech is caught, just as much as Twitter is caught, just as much as the FBI and Homeland Security and other three-letter agencies that have been participating with these organizations in shaping policy, in deplatforming people, in silencing speech, in throttling, in shadow banning, and all of those other terms that they've been using. And we've learned a lot of terms through this thing. I'll get to some of that here in a minute. But the point being is that they are, in fact, a cartel. And this is a collusion between three major entities. The first one being the big tech companies themselves. The second one being the fact that they have received the assistance of the mainstream media because, as I've said, and this is one of my axioms, or, you know, it's if the New York Times, Washington Post, NPR, CNN doesn't say it, then it never happened. And so either they need to say, oh, it's just been long discredited, or just ignore it completely, or as completely as they possibly can get by with. And that's exactly what they've been doing. And when we see them ignore a story of this magnitude and this size, we know it's bigger than anything that we've seen before. And this is huge. The more they ignore it, the more they try to sweep it under the rug, the more they scurry for the dark corners themselves, then we know how big it is. And the bigness of this begins, as we've talked about, not just with Hunter Biden's laptop and the contents therein and the participation of his father in all of the dealings that were happening in Ukraine, China, Russia, other business dealings around the world that Hunter had his hands in and that the big guy was getting his 10% of, so forth and so on. Even though we've known about it, you and I have known about it because we read the other side. We pay attention. Yeah, we have to pay attention to both sides because we get one side shoved down our throat, but we open ourselves up and look and see what the other side is saying as well. Whereas half of the universe, half of our country only get their information from MSNBC, NBC, CNN, such as that. And so they're not getting the full content. They're not getting the full access to the resources that are available. There's a lot of investigative journalists out there doing great work that don't necessarily toe the narrative. And I think it's, you know, it's very interesting, the three journalists that Elon Musk has tapped to roll out these Twitter files thus far. Matt Tabby, or however you say his name, he's the toughest one to pronounce, them, Barry Weiss, obviously, and then Michael Schellenberger, all who have been on the other side, all who have been discredited, who have been dismissed, who have been deplatformed, who have been attempted to be canceled because at some point they stepped off of the plantation. They stepped off the plantation and began to actually tell the truth about what they were seeing from the inside. And when we're talking about Schellenberger, the inside of the climate change conspiracies, and beginning to tell the truth about the actual math, the actual numbers, the actual science as opposed to the narrative. Barry Weiss stepping off the plantation of the MSN. Matt Taibbi, stepping off the plantation as well. And of course, just the act of doing that brings derision and criticism to them from their old comrades in the MSM. But the bottom line is that I think it's very interesting that Elon Musk tapped them to be the ones to roll out these Twitter files. And I think we're up to five batches now is what have been rolled out. And there's yet more to come. As I've been going through all of these things, I was reminded, talking about this collusion, and I don't think I finished my thought there, but the three major entities, obviously the MSM companies that have provided cover for the big tech companies, but then they've also been providing cover for the collusion with government. And yes, to my libertarian compadres, yes, this has been a violation of the First Amendment. Yes, these are alleged private companies, but when they have actual three-letter government agencies officing inside the same damn buildings with them, colluding with them every day, taking instruction from them every day of who needs to be silenced, who needs to be throttled, who needs to be shadow banned, who needs to be, a couple of these new words, de-amplified, or on the other hand, allow listed. These are counter speech. These are like Orwellian thoughts. These are when I was reading through these Twitter file releases, and I'm seeing those words like allow listed. It's two words combined into one. Allow listed, de-amplified. In other words, shadow banned. I couldn't help but think of 1984 and Newspeak and the words like crime think, unpersoned, double think, black white. That's what I felt like I was reading as I was reading these files, because we have a bunch of unelected, not even bureaucrats. We're talking about officers at these companies, Facebook, Twitter. Ostensibly, we have to assume that it's taking place at Google/YouTube as well. But what we have is we have a bunch of people who were never elected to anything, who are now managing the town square, and that are taking advice and direction from government agencies themselves, who are officing basically inside their own headquarters, whether it's the FBI, whether it's Homeland Security, and others, that are identifying the voices that they consider to be trouble to the narrative and to their agenda and to whatever direction that they're wanting this country to go. And that's who is being targeted. That's who is being de-amplified or allow-listed, as it were. And that is exactly what has been taking place. And that's why, because of that collusion between government and big tech, and then the cover that has been provided them by the mainstream media, this is why this is in fact a crime. And this is why Elon Musk said that Twitter, I forget the exact quote now, I don't have it right in front of me, but it's not only a social media company, but it's also a crime scene, is what he said and tweeted out a couple of days ago. And that's exactly what he's finding. This is a crime against our Constitution. This is a crime against the American way. And in fact, that these people should be investigated for criminal behavior. Not just the executives at these social media platforms, but those individuals who came over from the government agencies and worked with them for the deplatforming of various individuals and for their, well, the deamplification of their speech, because that's exactly what's been happening by virtue of the government participating with them. This is not free enterprise. This is not free companies or private companies doing what they want to do. When you have private companies that are then receiving legal protection from the government itself because the type of platform that they are, and because they're not supposed to be a publisher, and they receive special protections that none of the rest of us perceive or receive, then they then collude with government in deciding what is allowable speech and what is not allowable speech, and who can speak and who can't speak, and who needs to go away, who needs to be unpersoned. Yeah, exactly, unpersoned. Then we have a problem, and we have a violation of the Constitution, and we have literally an illegal cartel taking place. We talk about conspiracies. We talk about convicting the five so-called oath keepers of seditious conspiracy against the government because three of them walked inside the Capitol with no weapons for 17 minutes. It did no harm to anyone, broke nothing in the process, walked in, said a prayer, defended a law enforcement officer, walked out, went back to their hotel rooms before curfew, followed the law, and they're convicted of seditious conspiracy, literally of a plan to overthrow the government of the United States in 17 minutes with no guns, five of them, or 14 total, against fully armed law enforcement agencies, several of them, including SWAT teams and tactical units of almost every three-letter agency that was on the scene at the time. Yeah, but by comparison, we have a real conspiracy here against the Constitution of the United States and against speech. And we are being allowed to see the discussion of how it was taking place at the time and how the determination was made not to just delist, not to just deplatform, not to just silence conservative voices or frontline medical professionals and scientists who didn't toe the COVID narrative, but even the president of the United States. Don't care whether you like him or not. It's not the point. The point is that their decision was made not only against some of their own team saying, he really hasn't done anything wrong, but you know, we could twist it. We could interpret his words as being a furtherance of a call to insurrection or to further violence, that sort of thing. And in fact, I was looking at, and this was just in the latest dump here. It said, one particular quote says, it's pretty obvious he's going to try to thread the needle of incitement without violating the rules. Now, this was a comment about President Trump at the time saying he's going to thread the needle of incitement without violating the rules. And in fact, they came to the determination that he had not violated Twitter's community service policies. Nevertheless, it was time to shut him down. Having said that, I might remind you, and one of the, I think it was Schnellenberger, reminded us that in June 2018, Iran's Ayatollah Ali Khamenei tweeted, and this is exactly what he said in a tweet. He said, Israel is a malignant cancerous tumor in the West Asian region that has to be removed and eradicated. It is possible, and it will happen. Now, Twitter neither deleted that tweet nor banned the Ayatollah for saying those things. But because of the words that President Trump said in the final days of his presidency, they decided that he was too dangerous. And what were those words? Well, those words were very simply, I'm not going to attend the inauguration. Well, this was actually discussed. Him saying, I'm not going to attend the inauguration, was basically a dog whistle to incite violence, further violence, probably on inaugural day itself, by saying he wasn't going to be there. In other words, you guys are free to do whatever you want to do, your nefarious deeds. That's just as twisted as what was said by, if you remember, Chairman Benny Thompson of the January 6th committee, when he said, and I quote, that Trump had summoned a mob to Washington afterward on January 6th, when he knew that the assembled mob was heavily armed and angry. He commanded the mob to go to the Capitol, and he emphatically commanded the heavily armed mob to fight like hell. And then Thompson went on to say, even though he was the only person in the world who could call off the mob he sent to the Capitol, he could not be moved to rise from his dining room table and walk the few steps down the White House hallway into the press briefing room, where cameras were anxiously and desperately waiting to carry his message to the armed and violent mob, savagely beating and killing law enforcement officers, ravaging the Capitol, and hunting down the vice president and various members of Congress. And then Thompson concluded by saying, these facts have gone undisputed, except that none of that actually ever happened. I mean, nothing that he said there actually ever happened. Command the mob. He actually said, I know that everyone here, this is what Trump said on that day. He said, I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. That's what he actually said. Nothing like what Benny Thompson claimed that he said. He said, Thompson, that Trump emphatically commanded the heavily armed mob to fight like hell. Well, except that he didn't. When he actually used the words fight like hell, Trump was actually saying, and I quote, our brightest days are before us. Our greatest achievements still await. I think one of our great achievements will be election security, because nobody, until I came along, had any idea how corrupt our elections were. And again, most people would stand there at 9 o'clock in the evening and say, I want to thank you very much, and then they go off to some other life. But I said, something is wrong here. Something is really wrong. Can't have happened. And we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. Now, the fight like hell was not talking about going to the Capitol as an armed mob. He had already said, I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. But the fight like hell was like so many other Democrats have said before. Eric Swalwell, all right, when he told CNN's Don Lemming, he said, I'll fight like hell to make sure we see this report, talking about the Mueller report on Russiagate. We're talking about Senator Ron Wyden, when he said, we are going to fight like hell to get our bill in the next COVID-19 package, or Senator Chuck Schumer, who told Hispanic leaders on May 2nd of 2020 in a conference call. He said Democrats are going to fight like hell for COVID-19 related government assistance. And then, of course, we move on and we have the likes of Senator Bernie Sanders, who also said, I know many other senators and members of this House will fight like hell to make sure we act and act as soon as possible, blah, 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 on COVID-19 relief. You keep going, and then you get all the way up to then-President Biden, who said on June 25th, 2020, families all across the nation deserve a president who would go into the White House and who will fight like hell to make sure that they get the health care that they need. And then, of course, we have the current vice president, who was then Senator Kamala Harris, who said millions of Americans are counting on us to stand up right now and fight like hell to protect the Supreme Court. So Biden, Harris, Schumer, Sanders, Swalwell, right down the line, can say the words fight like hell. And they're not deplatformed. They're not delisted. They're not unpersoned for using that phrase. But when President Trump was talking about election security, and he said, if we don't fight like hell, then we won't have a country anymore. Same context as what they were saying fight like hell about and whatever their particular issue was of the day. But those words are then twisted beyond when he had already said, I know that you'll soon be marching over to the Capitol, trying to Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. Then those words are twisted into incitements to violence. And yeah, we know that violence took place that day, but we know that the violence happened before he finished these words and finished this speech. And as I've said before, I'm tired of being put into a position where I have to defend President Trump, a guy that I don't even like. But I have to, if I'm going to be a truthsayer. If I'm going to stand up for what's right, and I'm going to use my voice in a way that must be accurately used, then I have to defend people I don't like. And that's where I've been put. And that's exactly what these Twitter files are. I mean, think about it. Elon Musk, he was the darling of the left. I mean, come on. This is a guy who has done more for green energy advancement than who else on the planet. I mean, who else? Built the biggest electric car company on the planet, was the darling of the left in so doing. They were all buying and driving his automobiles. And then he sees a truth that he knows needs to be out there. He sees cover-up that needs to be unveiled. And then he's no longer the darling. In fact, now they want him silenced. They want him investigated. Well, wait a minute. I thought it was a private company. He could do what he wanted to. Well, it really is. It's no longer a publicly traded company. It really is a private company now. He can do what he wants to with it. And the one thing that he is doing is something that they were hoping would never be done, is that their collusion is being revealed and that the veil is being taken off of that three-headed monster between the mainstream media, big tech, and those three-letter government agencies. And that's exactly what it is. And that's exactly what's been happening with the Twitter files. And so rather than going through and reading a bunch of quotes from them, I don't think that that's necessary. I think I've said enough here today. Anyway, I'm alive and well. And I've got a lot more to say about all of this. If you saw my notes, I mean, my notes are crazy. I'm still not sleeping at night. It's still taking me 2-3 hours every night when I lay my head down on the bed at night to get to sleep, because I can't quit reliving that which I saw in the courtroom in D.C., where I saw truth being stood on its head, where I saw the Department of Justice purposefully lying in order to scapegoat this small handful of individuals for a narrative. A political narrative. And that's exactly what it was. And I'm not going to shirk from my responsibility to tell the truth about that. I'm not going to shrink. I'm not going to be de-amplified. They may unperson me, but they'll have to target me directly. They're not going to scare me because of what they've done to others in the process. All right. I am Steve, your friendly neighborhood pragmatic constitutionalist, and I skipped over all the commercial announcements today. Just go follow us on our Locals page. Please do that. ThePragmaticConstitutionalist.locals.com. ThePragmaticConstitutionalist.locals.com. We are obviously on Facebook, Twitter, Gab, Parler, MeWe, True Social, But our home base now is locals. We even have our own website, thepragmaticconstitutionalist.com, but our home base is locals. It's free to subscribe there as a read-only subscription, and please do that if that's all you can do. But if you can support us for as little as $5 a month, that would be very much appreciated. That's how I'm able to do what I'm doing right now. I can't do it without your help, and that is it, because I have nothing to sell yet. Maybe soon. I am researching other possibilities at the moment for expanding our reach. As I mentioned at the top of this podcast, I just finished my appearance on TNN Live with Dan Newman, and he averages about 250,000 people as listenership every day. But when I'm on there on Tuesday morning, he gets this huge bump, and we were up to 800,000 people listening to our segment today. And that happens every Tuesday at 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 Central. So follow us there, TNN Live with Dan Newman, every Tuesday morning, obviously right here on this channel. I always forget all of the things, you know, like, subscribe, share. That's how we make the algorithms work, and that's regardless of wherever you're seeing or hearing this. Obviously, the videos are on Rumble. The podcasts are where all the major podcast platforms, if you're listening to it in audio form. But if you like it, give us 5-star ratings. If you share it, if you subscribe, especially, all of those things help us in the process of amplifying our voice and getting it out to more and more people. So thank you for doing that. And once again, if you can help us in becoming a supporting member at Locals, that's great. As little as $5 a month, you can do that. Or you can get 2 months free with an annual subscription of $50. Or if you don't like to subscribe to anything, you can do a one-time donation there as well. All right. Once again, Steve, TPC, the Pragmatic Constitutionalist. And it is December 13th, and it is just after lunch, and I've not had lunch yet, so I'm going to go do that now. Thanks a bunch. Talk to you soon.